When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts in the mind of a cartoonist, and back in the car, on my way to the Detroit Public Library to lead another event for the KRC Super Fun Tour. And, as I've said in past Thunder Punches, it seems like the only time I ever get to dash off a quick audio essay for you guys is when I'm on the road. So the rest of my time is spent, at least lately, it's been 12, 15-hour days between freelancing and teaching and doing Kids Read Comics prep, you know, with only about a month and a half away from Kids Read Comics proper. There's a lot to do, but I'm not here to complain about that. Well, as a matter of fact, I'm here to do the opposite of complaining, because I was digging around on the forums, seeing what you guys were talking about, seeing what I could respond to, what I could lend my voice to, and I saw a post by Peter Palmiotti of peterpalmiotti.deviantart.com. He also does a show called The Independent Road on TalkShoe, and this was a couple weeks ago. He posted about some bad news from Dark Horse Comics, having to downsize, less jobs in the comics industry, and then I think it was RJ posted in the forum a follow-up about the demise of Tokyo Pop, the manga publisher. And Peter was just putting on a call for some good news. Come on, all we hear is bad news about the comics industry these days. And while I can't speak to this deeply, because after all, I don't pay a ton of attention to the mainstream or direct market industry, I do think that this is kind of, and this isn't to diminish what Peter's saying, it seems like, as a matter of fact, it may even reinforce what Peter was saying, is that it seems like we've been getting nothing but bad news for about 10 years now, if not longer. I remember in 2002, when I was working at Antarctic Press, and we sold 2,000 copies of our miniseries PPV, 2,000 copies of each issue. And I got a whopping check for, what was it, $200, $300. I don't remember, but it was a couple hundred bucks I got for doing a three-issue miniseries and making myself sick drawing it. I remember Tom Root sent me an email that said, don't quit your day job. And I remember having a lot of discussions with other cartoonists and writer friends about how fewer people, each year it seemed like fewer and fewer people were reading comics, and it really seemed like the industry itself or the medium itself was going to die in the upcoming years. I mean, and I've said before, this is one of the reasons I got into teaching, because I wanted to, if comics was going to die, it was not going to happen because of my lack of involvement in trying to advocate for it, you know? I was going to go down punching. But the thing is I don't really think that watching the mainstream industry is all that fruitful to measuring what's really happening in comics. It seems like there's so many other really good things happening in comics right now, and it could just be that the direct market, if it can't adapt, maybe it just needs to go away. Maybe it just needs to die, and we're just watching it thrash around with its final death throes. I'm not saying that I would rejoice in that. There's a lot of good people who work in the direct market. There's a lot of talented cartoonists and deserving people who work in that market. But if the market, if the business model is broken, then maybe it just, if it can't be fixed, it can't be fixed. And maybe it needs to fall apart so that something new and better can come out of it. And maybe all these creators can find another way to make a living. But for those who do pay attention to the mainstream industry, the direct market industry, I do see two solid reasons to pay attention to it and to keep an eye on it. One is if you want to work in it. If you want to know sort of the climate of finding work. We all want to make a living making comics, and you know, some of the highest paying jobs in comics can still be found in the direct market. So, okay, I get that, and I can see why somebody who hopes to work in that industry would be dismayed by layoffs and decreasing sales numbers within the industry. And then the other reason that I can imagine that you'd want to pay attention to it is as a barometer of who's reading comics. Now, the second one, well, both of these situations, both of these motives for paying attention to the direct market are, from my standpoint, reasons why I don't pay attention to it. Because, one, I don't really have high hopes to work in the direct market. I don't really feel strongly about getting work in that arena. The stuff that's being produced there is stuff that I don't really want to do, and I suspect that my work would not find an audience there. But then, considering it as a barometer of the who's buying comics, how many people are out there who are enjoying comics, I don't think it is an accurate barometer. I think that there isn't any kind of really clear tracking data in place to see who actually is out there reading comics. When I talk with kids in my workshops, very few, if any, cite a superhero comic being produced today as being their favorite book. These kids are reading Sonic the Hedgehog. These kids are reading manga. These kids are reading things that they're finding in the grocery aisle, like Archie Digest. The other day, I was leading a workshop, and a kid mentioned Betty Boop as a favorite comics character. And I thought, well, how is there a comic being produced with Betty Boop in it? I imagine a Fantagraphics book, maybe, but that wouldn't be for kids. But anyway, so I don't think that that's a reason to pay attention to the direct market judging who's buying comics, because I don't think we know. I mean, if somebody out there has resources for tracking data on who's actually buying stuff being produced by the trade publishers, by the Scholastics, First Seconds, HarperCollins, that would be interesting. I'd love to know that. I remember hearing at the American Library Association conference last year that some of the Scholastic books were selling 100,000, 20,000 copies of their graphic novels, which by American direct market comic standards is huge numbers. So that's an area where it's much more interesting in looking at it. So in terms of assuaging people's anxiety over what's happening in the direct market, if it collapses, is it the end of comics? Gosh, I really don't think so. And I think that we can look at what's happening in the trade publishing world, we can look at what's happening in the webcomics world as symbols of that. So, okay, going back to reason one for looking at the direct market, finding work. I just finished a coloring book for a nonprofit organization called Seriously. I posted about it on my blog. It's at comicsaregreat.com/SRSLY, Seriously spelled in text language. And you can see some images from the book that I did. Now, I got paid well. I got paid like a Marvel Comics page rate to do this book and create these characters. This is going to be distributed to thousands of children in the Chelsea school district. Is this making the radar of the Comics Journal? Is this in the purview of the Eisner Awards? No. But I'm making a living drawing comics. There's more than just the direct market for finding work. We all know this. You can make yourself a successful webcomic that you monetize and you keep all the copyrights, or you can do work for hire like what I do on the side with my freelance work. I'm getting approached all the time from people asking me to do work for hire comics work for them. I think the work is still out there, and I don't think you have to work on a franchise superhero character in order to make the money, make money doing that. However, let's suppose the direct market does collapse. Marvel and DC aren't going to go away. They've got all these intellectual properties they put on lunchboxes and trading cards and T-shirts. They're going to need artists for that. Mark, Kevin, and I, and Sarah Turner of Cricket-Press.com worked on the Marvel Superhero Squad line illustrating the trading cards. And I remember being delighted by this job because I was drawing Spider-Man. I was getting paid. That fulfilled a childhood ambition of mine. And these cards were going to be seen by probably more children than if they were to pick up the comics. Or more children were going to have these cards than were going to have the comics, is what I was trying to say, right? Because fewer and fewer kids are collecting the comics because they can't find them. Because retailers aren't stocking them. Marvel and DC aren't adequately marketing them. So doing the cards, even though I couldn't put my name on it, even though I couldn't say, hey, this is a Jersey Droz joint, hey, you should check out jdroz.com afterwards, I was drawing something that was going to be seen by thousands of kids. That's one of my goals in life. So, mission accomplished. And I got paid well for that job. So I think the work is out there. So I think being dismayed by the demise of the direct market, or the apparent demise of the direct market, for our own personal, like, what shall become of us now, I think is a little bit Chicken Little, because there's more work to be had out there. A lot of even guys who worked in the direct market who were popular 10 years ago, but can't find, you know, for some reason they're just not in the current flavor, they move on to doing storyboards for film and things like that. Ernie Colon is celebrating his 80th birthday this year. The man is still working. Is he drawing any Marvel and DC books? No. But he's doing a lot of interesting work. You look at what he did with the 9/11 Commission Report. He did a graphic novel adaptation of the story of Vlad Tepes, Dracula. So the man's still working, even at 80 years old, right? So, and then let's share some other good news. Is that this is stuff the direct market and the news agencies who cover the direct market aren't paying attention to. I just got the Access Guide from the Ann Arbor District Library. Now, the Access Guide is sort of a brochure aimed at teens, highlighting all the teen events going on over the summer. And this is just covering the summer. This is like May through, I think, late July. This thing is a big brochure. I mean, it unfolds. And it unfolds to about like 18 inches deep by about 8.5 inches wide. And there was one entire third of, well, I should say a sixth, because it's double-sided. One sixth, so you unfold it twice, and you got this 18 inches deep by 8 inches wide page, entirely comics programming. Entirely. The entire thing was, and they had, for the first time, they actually had a logo for a comics section of the Access Guide. So that means that there's enough programming going on at the library just in that 3-month period that they had to fill an entire page of the book. That was incredibly gratifying to me, because I had a little bit of a hand in that. But what that points to is that there is, in this tiny little town of Ann Arbor, 150,000 people, and I don't know if that's with or without the students at U of M, but in any case, 150,000 people, that's not a big town. Ask anybody who lives in New York City. There's enough interest there in comics that they can fill up their programming schedule with comics, to fill up an entire page of the program guide. That's amazing. I'm doing a tour visiting 21 libraries, and each tour stop there's between 10 and 30 kids at each stop who are hungry to make comics, whether it's a rural area or an urban area. And as a matter of fact, I'm finding in the urban and rural areas I'm getting better turnouts than in the suburban areas. So there's success stories there. I went to a conference on Friday called The Download at Torrance Learning in Chelsea, Michigan. I got invited to come there. It was sort of like a very, very relaxed TED Talks, where speakers are invited to just, you sit in the room in like a round table kind of format, and the public speaker, instead of doing a big, huge presentation, they engage us all in an interactive discussion on their topic, which I found to be a lot of fun. And during one of the talks, I got involved in a conversation with the speaker about social networking, and they were talking about social networking and education, and I started sharing some of my thoughts on it based on what I've been doing with it, you know, working with kids and trying to manage a comics career as well as a teaching artist career with social networking, and that whole blurring of the line that happens where I'm both a cartoonist and a teaching artist at the same time. There's not a clear distinction of brand between those two things, and so on. And at the end of the conference, during this discussion, it came out that I was a cartoonist and that I teach comics. At the end of the conference, there was an hour block of open time, and the program director walked into the room and said, well, we can just mingle for this last hour, or we can vote on an encore presentation of one of the workshops, of one of the presentations that you may have missed. So we can get a second chance at some of these, because there was a lot of overlapping programming. And somebody in the room said, I want to hear from this Jersey Droz guy. This teaching comic stuff that he's doing sounds really interesting. I want him to do an impromptu presentation. And I did my best to be modest and go, oh, no, I'm here as a participant. I don't want to learn from you guys. But they put it to a vote, and I wound up being conscripted to do a comics presentation at this conference. And I had a packed room. I had like 20, 30 people as I did. And I didn't have any of my materials. They just gave me a dry erase board and some markers, and I did my best to do like a presentation on like how comics work. And it was a lot of fun. But this isn't to congratulate myself for getting another speaking gig, because I didn't get paid for this. It would have been nice if I, as a matter of fact, I should have said, like, okay, that'll be $300. But what was neat about it is it's a signal to me that people are very interested in this stuff. So even if the direct market is suffering setbacks and lack of sales and they're having trouble changing their model to adapt to new economies and new distribution methods, that doesn't mean that comics are going to go away. And all that means, and this is just the sound all Seth Godin-esque, I realize it sounds that way, is that it's an opportunity for us. It's an opportunity for us to swoop in and find niche markets and find new ways of reaching these audiences who are hungry for this stuff. Yes, it means that there are less and less quote-unquote stable jobs for us to find where we could get our run on Spider-Man for a while. But even a run on Spider-Man doesn't grant you any kind of security, because once you are no longer in Wizard's top 10, well, if they even have a top 10 anymore, because that magazine went under, rest in peace. But even after you're out of the favor of the current climate, what are you going to do then? The fact that you worked on Spider-Man is no guarantee that you're going to find work after that. You have to keep running, you have to keep struggling, you have to keep hunting for work. And so whether or not there's a direct market seems to me to be an irrelevant point to the whole issue. The fact is that people still want comics. There are tons of comics being produced that none of us even know about, but people are reading. And we can't let this little tiny echo chamber, to use a buzzword, of comics journalism, who's only paying attention to the direct market and people who are involved in that, bewilder us into thinking that there's no more opportunities. There's tons of opportunities. I've never felt more confident about the future of comics. And it is funny, to paraphrase Barry Gregory, who was on the Comics Are Great podcast, episode 12, with me and Eli Nyberger, when he said that it's ironic that as comics experiences its greatest flourishing of talent and variety of storytelling, comics retailers in the direct market is facing its greatest crisis. But with every crisis comes an opportunity, and let's not let this crisis distract us from the flourishing that's going on. So I hope that dissuades a few people's fears. I feel sanguine. I feel optimistic about what's happening right now. And for all of the grousing and bellyaching I do about the missteps that the direct market is making, I really don't think about it that much. I posted on Twitter yesterday, in my workshop I did that night, there was one boy and eight girls in my class. And I said, you know, direct market publishers, the bell tolls for thee unless you act soon. And I think that's true, but I don't think they're going to listen. And it doesn't really matter in the long run, because people like Raina Telgemeier, people like Hope Larson, people like Casey Van Heist, they're going to swoop in and find those audiences. And, that's just too bad for the direct market. But it's pretty good for the independent publishers and the people who are published by the trade publishers and people who find other kinds of publishing vehicles for their work. So, who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. And chin up. Keep punching, and I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
In today's story, the beautiful voice of Solis kept the evil Yod from making all sorts of bad things happen. Now, I can't promise that a song will make any magic for you, but I can promise that when you're feeling lonely or sad, and we all do sometimes, if you try singing a song or maybe whistling or maybe just smiling, you'll feel a lot better. Honest. Try it and see. And I'll be seeing you very soon. Bye now.